special bonds with certain people. It's our goal to keep in touch with young artists as they go off into undergraduate and graduate school, to try and keep track of them, to see how they're doing, what they're doing, and what performances are coming up, and just exhibit interest so that we aren't just dropping them at the door. And so Amy and I are Facebook friends, and she will, once in a while when her schedule allows, just regale me with all of her joys and sorrows of what it's like to be pursuing a music career in New York City. So we've stayed friends.
Now, Julie, when this coming concert for the chorale in a week is also featuring Amy Elizabeth Treat. She'll be doing a solo there, right?
She will. I've asked her to do something special. When she found out that we were doing the Foray Requiem, she said, "Oh, when I was at Augustana, my voice teacher, and correct me if I'm wrong, Amy, but she said, sang that at the Pia Jesu solo, and I so wanted to do that. I just wanted to sing that." We had this conversation on the phone, and I said, "Well, do you still want to sing that?" And she said, "Yes." So she will be a part of the Requiem in the sense that she'll do the Pia Jesu as a soloist, but then she's going to sing on her own.
And what will that be, Elizabeth?
I will sing an aria from Ambroise Thomas's opera Mignon, which is not frequently performed in the repertoire these days. It's a secondary character, Philine, who has a delightful, very showy and fun aria called Je suis Titania in French, or I am Titania. She's queen of the fairies, and she's talking about flying around in the stars and shooting the moon and doing all kinds of wonderful things, which, of course, as we discussed before, the coloratura comes alive. You'll hear lots of trills and scales and high notes, and it's a thrilling ride and a very, very fun piece for concert environment.
And so you're really providing two very different, really contrasting types of singing for soprano in the Foray and the aria you're going to do.
Well, that's the great challenge and the great satisfaction of becoming an artist who has a paintbrush that can do little filigree as well as the broad, beautiful strokes with a warm glow. I mean, you really want to be able to, as an artist, do both extremes and everything in the middle. So as Julie knows, because we've talked about this over the years, for me, high notes and runs have always been comfortable. And it's the opposite. For most people, they're afraid of the high notes and the runs, but then singing slower and more lyrical is easier for them. For me, it's just been such a challenge to develop the lyric, warm side of my voice. And so it's very nice to come around full circle at this point, at this juncture, and sing in the Pia Jesu in something that traditionally is done by more lyric sopranos, and it offers a bit of a softer side and shows versatility.
Well, speaking of versatility, I noticed you also have enjoyed for years singing songs from the Great American Songbook, popular songs from the various decades of American history.
Oh, of course. Well, what's better than that? I mean, when I came out to New York, I was very, very poor. And, of course, all around you is glitz and glamour and money and $19 martinis and jazz clubs. And I was fortunate to make friends with an attorney. I was working as a temp in his office, and he took me to the Carlisle Hotel, to Bemelman's Piano Bar there, where there was piano jazz and vocal jazz. And wow, I had never been so blown away by the intimacy of the performance, by the culture of all of that, and how old New York it is, how wonderful the music was, and it all just brought it all to life in a new way. So I've enjoyed singing a lot of that, and in fact, I ended up going back myself when I got a real job and could afford it, and made friends with that very pianist who invited me to stand up and sing a set. And so I've actually performed there some American standards and some great Cole Porter and Gershwin tunes the past couple of years. I've enjoyed that tremendously. And when I was going through difficulty technically and some very trying times when your voice is growing, you haven't quite caught up technically with it, some of the repertoire you would practice you aren't really able to sing, going back to Somewhere Over the Rainbow can be an immense, wonderful comfort. The familiarity of that and the ease of that compared with Queen of the Night and the Magic Flute and all the traps and technical difficulties. The songbook provides, it's like a warm blanket, you know, that's familiar and it's so much fun.
I want to push back even a little farther than that, Amy, in your singing career. I don't think you know this, but I happen to be the father of a grade school friend of yours, Marla Shoemaker.
Of course. And, I remember that.
And I first heard you sing when you were 8 years old in third grade a Whitney Houston song, and Marla reminded me that it was called The Greatest Love of All.
Oh, wow. Well, I have to share a memory with you, as a matter of fact, and I think it was probably around that time, it might have been a year or two earlier, Marla was having a birthday party, and a lot of the girls from our grade, we came over and we gathered in the living room, and you put on an old 45 of Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini, and you and all of your tallness danced around with all these 7-year-old girls, and boy, it was like the thrill of the year.
Where was the video camera?
Yes. Thank goodness that's gone. Well, perhaps that's enough nostalgia. Let's talk a little bit about what's coming up. And we have a cut of a Handel piece that you've sung and recorded, and we have it here in the studio. Tell us a little bit about it. We're going to play it. This is a tell us about it.
Sure. It's a wonderful piece. This is from Handel's opera Alcina. And the grand bel canto style of Handel, which is just wonderful stuff. What I can say about this particular role is it is Morgana who is the maid and not the leading role, Alcina, who is supposed to sing this aria. However, as history would have it, of course, Handel lends itself well to pastiche and swapping things in and out. I mean, the text may be, I love you, don't be cruel. And so they could easily attribute that to one of the other characters in one of their scenarios throughout the different operas and in the one that it's in. So, for example, Joan Sutherland, the great Australian soprano, when she sang this role at La Scala, she decided she wanted to be the one to sing Morgana's aria, Porta mia vaghe giara. So she took it for herself, incorporated it into her role, and of course, as legend has it, she was called La Stupenda because of singing that role in La Scala at that time. And this is just such a delightful piece, the classic ABA form. You have the brighter A section that goes into a more contrasting, more soulful B section that's slower and then repeats the A section, which gives you license to freely ornament and just show off as spectacular a coloratura as you have possibly got. This is a good example of that.
Now, for our listeners who know Handel mainly through the oratorios, they may not know that he started out writing the Italian operas of the style of the times, and needed money. And he started writing oratorios because in England, where he ended up being, that would sell better. And but he does have some wonderful opera arias. And well, let's hear this one that is sung by Elizabeth Treat from New York City. Oh, Well, we'll stop that there. We've been listening to a recording of Elizabeth Treat from New York City, coloratura soprano, singing from Handel, an aria. Julie, tell us what some of these wonderful, glowing reviews have been of Elizabeth as she's performed.
Well, one of the greatest joys when you're struggling in New York to be a singer is to accrue some of these wonderful statements that come from people of note, and I've read through them. She shares them with me as they come through. And this one I wanted to read because I thought it was, who in the world wouldn't want this said about them? Elizabeth has everything one looks for in a soprano of her type. Brilliant high notes, of course. Complete assurance in coloratura. Music taste, dramatic sensitivity, and striking good looks. This by Fabrizio, don't I see you blushing. This by Fabrizio Milano, stage director at the Met. And I will say that as you've been working with the Amore Opera Company, is it not true that an associate conductor of the Met, Gregory Buchalter, has been working with you? Is that
yes,
true?
That's absolutely right. It's been a wonderful, wonderful change for me to connect with Greg. Maestro Gregory Buchalter has been an assistant conductor at the Metropolitan Opera for a long, long time. He does a lot of the backstage conducting when there is a band offstage or a chorus offstage or, you know, the heavenly voice singing offstage. He's the one that's taking care of that and leading it all with a little red laser pointer in the dark backstage and coordinating everything. He's really quite fabulous. And he was a young pianist and aspiring conductor in New York once upon a time. And he came to the Amato Opera, which, of course, was very famous. Tony Amato and his wife Sally started that, and they had a theater on the Bowery for decades. It was very famous in New York and a great place to get started. Many of the singers who started at Amato went on to sing at the Met and all over the world. And
many of those connections are just absolutely essential.
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
It's wonderful.
So he's quite a marvelous coach and conductor, and conducts and is artistic director as well at Opera Fairbanks, Opera Las Vegas, and Opera Camerata of Washington. So we've ended up working together in some other venues as well, and it's just led to a lot of artistic growth and performance opportunities. And
I know that Queen of the Night was your ticket for a long time, and I'm really thrilled that you're branching out and that people are hearing you in these other roles as well.
Queen of the Night is one of those things where many people, I had a teacher once say to me, have you ever seen the resume of someone who's doing Queen at a major opera house? The resume is all Queens.
Right, yes.
You know, it's one of those things that so few people can do it, and so few people can do it well, that once you are known for doing it, you pretty much can just go around queening.
Right.
You keep getting asked over and over, right? Which you don't mind repeating, of course.
You don't mind. Well, what's more fabulous? I mean, Mozart, you know, writing this incredible role. It's not a very long role, but the three scenes that she appears in the opera really pack a punch. I mean, they bring out the timpani, and usually there is lightning and thunder, and you know, just about as big as you can imagine.
And we can tell people they can go to YouTube and see Elizabeth Treat. Put in Elizabeth Treat, T-R-E-A-T, and soprano or coloratura, and you'll find YouTube video recordings of her singing some of those roles. It's wonderful to hear and to see. Julie, we need to take a little pause here for a moment and do some station business. But when we come back, I want to ask you about who some of the new people are coming up who will be hearing at this next concert next week of the Chorale at Faith United Methodist Church at 7 p.m. Sunday, May 12, in addition to Amy. But let's hear now what's coming up on Focus here on WILL AM 580 tomorrow at 10.
When Ralph Martire last appeared on Focus, the Illinois budget was in terrible shape. Now, 4 years later, the state budget is still a mess. But Martire, who runs the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, says it's not too late to make things better. I'm Jim Meadows, and Monday on Focus, Ralph Martire will analyze what went wrong with state finances and propose how to fix it. Ralph Martire on Focus Monday morning at 10 on WILL AM 580.
That will be Jim Meadows tomorrow at 10 in the morning. And again, we know many people listen to these Keeping the Faith programs and other locally produced programs on WILL at their convenience at later times. But this will be on coming up tomorrow. That it will be, what, the 5th? No, this is the 5th today. The 6th of May, 2013, here on AM 580. Well, let's do talk a little bit about what's coming up at this concert. First of all, who is the chorale?
Oh, my. We are an organization in its 30th year, unbelievably, that arose out of just a small Christmas caroling group in Mahomet. It was 7 years before we bothered to get our not-for-profit status because I was just sure every year it was going to be defunct. But it's a group of very diverse people, both in about every way you can mention, who come together with a singular, hopefully, desire to sing in an organization that, even Dr. Jessup, Dr. Craig Jessup, who is dean of the College of Cane Arts at Utah State University and a fine voice and a Metropolitan semifinalist himself, says the biggest thrill for him is to come into a choir and be lost in the section, and because you're just able to do more as a group of people than individually.
How many singers are there in the chorale who will be performing in a week?
Well, let's say there are 72 on the rolls, and I always have to hold my breath that everyone's well and not out of town. So I can't, don't count on the rise. Yes, yeah, stop, Steve. So, we'll be around 70 this year.
And who are the young artists of today?
Well, first of all, because it's our 30th year, we decided to invite back returning, that is, alumni from the Young Artist Program as far back as we could go, and those who were available. So the other gentleman who will be singing, much similarly to Amy, is here, as it happens, doing his master's work at the University of Illinois, studying with Barrington Coleman, and that's Davion Williams. His voice is just, it's one of those that you want to hear over and over again. He was a graduate of Central State University, and he has he's going to perform Greer's aria from Mignon. Is that right? Menon, from Menon, sorry. And Ride On King Jesus, because Davion is kind of like Amy. It's
versatile.
Yes, versatile. he can swing a spiritual and do an aria as well. So those are the two returning artists. But those who are being presented at this concert as winners, we have two.
These are winners of monetary scholarships to go on and study music in college.
That's exactly right. Those are the criteria. Caitlin Richardson from Mahomet, which is kind of interesting for me because we started in Mahomet and we haven't had very many Mahomet candidates. She is a soprano, and she currently has the female lead in Oliver, which is the Mahomet Seymour High School production. And she's the one we've chosen to sing. There were just far too many of them to sing at this concert. The other full scholarship winner is Celia Williams, who lives in Homer and goes to St. Joe, which, again, St. Joe Ogden High School, we haven't had very many, if any, as I recall, from there. And the other three, we have gone for years and had flutists and violinists and trombonists and trumpets, and not
string players.
String players, and not as many singers, for somewhat of a good reason, because the human voice matures along with the physical self. And when you play an instrument that has valves or holes or buttons, that's not quite as true. So we had five female singers, and they were all outstanding. The three that we were able to give partial scholarships to, mostly because our funds are limited, are Samantha Wells, who is a Champaign Centennial. I'll do it again. Samantha's at Centennial High School. She's a senior. And Kate Myers is our Central representative from Champaign. And then somehow our application got over to the Hoopston area, and I had a young woman by the name of Emily Margovich, who is quite a fine singer and will be coming over to receive. All of these girls will be presented their scholarships, introduced, and their parents and music teachers, if they have them, there in attendance. And then Caitlin will be the one who will perform, and we will ask Celia to come back during this next season and perform for us.
And again, this concert will be at Faith United Methodist Church on Prospect Avenue in Champaign, Illinois, on May 12th at 7 p.m. It's a free concert, although there will be an opportunity for those who wish to make contributions for scholarships. Through the chorale, we'll have a chance to do that. Well, let me give the phone numbers. I've neglected to do that earlier, partly by choice, because we have having so much fun with Elizabeth Treat by phone and playing one of her recent recordings and talking with Julie Byler, the founding director of the chorale. But we're also eager to have listeners call in and say hi to Elizabeth, known locally as Amy Treat, or Julie, both well-known in this community and more broadly, of course. But call us here. 333-9455 is the number to punch in if you're in the 217 area code near Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. If you're listening farther away, there's a toll-free number you may use, 800-222-9455. We know this program is heard throughout the world, really. Many of the locally produced programs here in WILL have followings elsewhere who listen live, perhaps, through a public media app on their phone or other device, or perhaps listening via computer at will.illinois.edu. Or perhaps later listening to podcasts. But if you're listening live, you may call us on that toll-free number if you're within the continental U.S. That's 800-222-9455. We're always eager for people to join the discussion, ask a question, or make a comment. We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon. Let me just mention who's coming up next week. I'll be gone for a couple weeks, so singing with different groups, the chorale next week and the following week with the program we mentioned last week when we had Chester Alwis here in the studio along with Rabbi Norman Klein. That will be a performance at Smith Music Hall of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana. And that will be a performance, those of you who heard a lot about last week, of Judas Maccabeus, Handel's wonderful oratorio. So since I'll be gone, we have a couple guest hosts coming for this live program. On May 12th, Don Nolan will be having an interview with Michael Ledoux. Many people know Michael Ledoux in this part of Illinois because he's on the city council of Champaign and has been for years representing the campus community. He's also a poet, quite good poet. And he'll be giving some readings of Poetic Impressions of Illinois. That's May 12 with host Don Nolan. On May 19, guest host Stan Yanchus will be talking with several Catholic priests from this area about the local impact of the new Pope Francis. That will be May 19 here on Keeping the Faith. Let me also just mention that this program has had longtime support from the University YMCA. For 140 years, the University Y has been helping students be involved in their community, doing community service, tutoring, working to improve the environment, all sorts of wonderful activities, social action. Coming up this next week at the University Y, they'll be collecting for Dump and Run. If you're doing spring cleaning or perhaps you're a student moving out of the university after your exams are over this week, bring things to the University Y, the corner of Wright and Chalmers, right across from Lincoln Avenue, or excuse me, the Lincoln Hall. And you'll be able to get rid of things that are still have use for someone, but that perhaps you don't have room for, that you're tired of. So collections will happen all this next week, May 6 through May 17, actually, from 9 to 4 most days. On May 9, you can come clear up till 6 p.m. to bring things to the Y. Household goods, furniture, clothes, books, CDs, all kinds of things. They will be saved by the Y, put in several huge semi-trailer trucks over the summer, and then will be sold in the fall with a huge garage sale out of the University Stock Pavilion. This is particularly helpful for university students who come from overseas. International students can fill up a whole apartment very cheaply that way. So it keeps things out of the waste stream, helps many students and other people who could use bargains, and it helps the Y generate a little income. So collections for Dump and Run. There's also a new art show at the Y, Identity, Activism, and Youth. Well, we have a caller waiting on line number 4. Let's go to that call. Yes.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Yes. I'm calling from New York. I've had the pleasure of hearing Miss Treat in performance several times, and I had a question for her. Of all your performances and all your travels, do you have maybe any funny stories? Or I know that performers usually find themselves in situations that they probably didn't originally expect. And I think that being the consummate professional, part of that is having to roll with the punches. Have you ever found yourself in a position where you had to make the most of the show and keep on going? Or do you have anything that you can share with us from I guess, the backstage or the performer's point of view?
Oh, sure. Of course, there's never an end to the shenanigans that go on backstage when you're performing, and that's half the fun of all of it. I can say in my master's program when I was performing in Candide, we had a peasant's battle scene, of course, Leonard Bernstein's Candide, a very famous piece, and the opening peasant battle scene, we all came on with our peasant weapons, and the girl in front of me, Melanie Malinka, if you're listening, this was you, had a very heavy rolling pin, so she was not able to hold it up as high as she was supposed to, and when we marched on stage in fury, she ended up whacking me in the eye socket at the end of the rolling pin. And the whole audience gasped. It was an audible crack. And instead of rolling with the punches and going on with the show, I just stumbled off stage and almost passed out and ended up in the emergency room. And my voice teacher had been in the audience and rushed over to see that my x-rays were okay and I survived. Unfortunately, this was right before spring break, and I went to Florida with a big black eye. And it started a lot of awkward conversations.
Oh, wow, that sounds pretty painful. I have another question, if I can.
Sure, go right ahead.
I noticed also that recently you've performed in Washington, D.C., and that it was held in a consulate or an ambassador. Just what is it like? I mean, what do you think of maybe backstage? Do you stop and think, you know, Here I am, you know, Midwest gal, you know, small town, and now here I am, you know, singing for, ambassadors and dignitaries. Is that, you know, I guess eat at nerves a little bit? Do you ever think about that beforehand, or do you have any type of ritual beforehand that that puts you in the right frame of mind
Darn. I'm sorry to hear that question, because I was going to show off how much research I'd done, because
no,
I found out about that performance that just happened, what, 2 or 3 days ago. Colombian
Embassy.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. In Washington, D.C.
like I said, I'm a big fan.
Tell us about it.
Oh, it was magnificent. This is, we talked about Maestro Buchalter earlier in the program at the Metropolitan Opera. This is one of his companies where he is artistic director currently. This is called Opera Camerata of Washington, D.C. And in the history of opera, if you think about, for example, you talked about Handel having to be paid and accommodate people were paying him, and if they didn't like what they heard, he would switch it up. You know, when opera began, it was for the kings and the queens and the royalty and the people who had the estates who could afford to put on the shows and mount the productions and hire all of the players. This is sort of similar to that, where you mount a production in one of these wonderful estates, embassies, halls, and of course our nation's capital is full of places like this, not all particularly tailored to the art of opera. And that presents a whole special series of challenges, maybe acoustically, theatrically, and whatnot. This particular one was held in a beautiful ballroom. Lots of carpet, so acoustically a bit of a challenge. The best part about singing for these people, they're so appreciative, and it's an intimate setting, and you are playing to them face-to-face. The seats are right in front of you. There is no stage. There is no pit for the orchestra. It's a wonderful, exciting situation where you can feel everyone all around you. You can catch eyes, and it's just quite invigorating.
I noticed you had the chamber orchestra just right there beside you, really, around you, surrounding you.
Yes, we did. The biggest challenge, of course, is with this particular situation, the conductor was behind the singers. So as we're playing to the audience, you have to cheat to make sure that you're with the orchestra, that you're with the baton. You can't always go on what you hear. You miss that eye contact, but what you gain when you give that up is a wonderful intimate connection with the audience. Was it nerve-wracking? Absolutely. It's a very, very daunting task to get in front of a lot of people in heels and a gown and a big cape and swirl around and sing high Fs above high Cs, and you just hope that everyone will be as thrilled as you are to get the chance to do it in the end. It was a success, and it was a season opener for Opera Camerata, and I think it was a very big success for the company. So I hope to join them again.
And caller, I hope you know I was teasing, and we're glad to have your questions. Thank you very much.
No,
appreciate
it. Not at all. Actually, can I ask one more?
All right.
I want to throw this out there. If you've not heard Mistreat, quote unquote, in action, as it were, you're really, really missing out. Absolutely fantastic. Fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
And
Fs
above high C, it almost seems as though she wakes up, you know, in the morning and just she's able to just pop them off like that. They just seem so effortless for her.
Well, caller, there's a great opportunity for people to hear Amy Treat this Sunday, May 12th, if you can make the trip.
Go ahead. Give the plug.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it. Elizabeth, when someone talks about an F above high C, tell us what we heard in the Handel. Do you remember what those high notes went to?
High into the stratosphere? We faded out before the return of the A section, so some of the ornaments and the higher notes that I interpolated in that section, we didn't get to hear.
So you added a few.
But we definitely add a few wherever possible. We add them in, and you want to dazzle them, as they say.
And in terms of what you'll be singing with the chorale next Sunday, May 12, do I have the Italian term right? Acuti.
Oh, acuti. Yes, I think that was one of the that was a word in one of the reviews. I had not heard that before, and I thought, wow, that's a great word.
I had to look it up.
Me too. Yes.
The highest pointed notes. Yes.
Yes, and it just implies that there's a kind of perfection and a bell-like sharpness to it, which of course you would want. The aria that I'm going to perform in the concert on May 12th at the chorale, it's going to be. In the end, there is an E flat, which is a whole step lower than the Queen of the Night's F above high C. Yet it's still up in the stratosphere and very thrilling and exciting and plenty, plenty high.
And Julie, tell us a little bit about how does one learn to sing those notes? You've been a vocal teacher and coach for decades. How do you teach that?
Oh, my. I think if I knew that, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be someplace making lots of money. But first of all, my voice students, for instance, it's not uncommon for them to not be able to find a head voice. But Amy found it early. She, Tell me exactly, Amy, when you discovered that you had those stratospheric notes.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, for the listeners who don't may not know this, though many of you probably do if you've been to a chorale concert where Julie has sung, Julie has a lovely, absolutely gorgeous lyric soprano voice and, you know, has her technique and all of her ideas. And when I was young, I tried to take advantage of that, but I fear I wasn't mature enough vocally to really get the breath going the right way. But
it's all about getting out of the middle voice and getting it into your head where it's no longer a strain on your throat, your voice box, your chords. And then it's kind of like magic. Once you find that place, it just seems to be, I don't know, just happens. Now, we do a couple exercises in class. We react as sirens, you know, just to take your voice up as high as you can without the thought of singing, but just
mimicking
the siren, right. So it's, and then, of course, some voices just aren't meant to do that.
Thank you.
Oh.
I won't ask.
Well, I have to say, as you say, some voices, I mean, every voice is unique. And for me, when I was younger, I had a bit of a darker color to my voice, but I always vocalized very high. I sang with the Central Illinois Children's Chorus for many years, and I remember going for my very first audition with the conductor, Carolyn Paulin, and she vocalized me very, very high, and I remember she made a face that indicated to me I was singing higher than most of the kids who were coming and vocalizing. But I went in to start rehearsals, and this was to begin a pattern that has repeated throughout my life in choral situations where I sang very high, but I didn't blend well with the other sopranos. I tended to stick out. So usually the next step would be, let's put you in the second sopranos, and we'll try that for a couple weeks. And it would be a similar issue. There was a bit of a weight and a darker color, and it didn't quite blend. And then usually the next step would be, well, we're going to put you with the altos because you're a good reader, and we think that you would blend better there. So I've ended up in lowland as far as range in most choral situations, but I always had a very easy top. This presented a lot of problems, which I have subsequently had to work out. And I've found when I've put them all together in the end, what's come out of the oven is a very high voice with lots of agility, but also a bit of natural weight and a dark color that people say is unusual. So everyone is unique, just like everyone else, you know?
We've been talking with Elizabeth Treat, T-R-E-A-T, soprano, coloratura soprano from New York City, who grew up in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. We've indulged in a bit of nostalgia, but we've also heard a recent recording of hers. She'll be singing with the chorale in concert May 12th at Faith United Methodist Church on Prospect Avenue in Champaign, along with the chorale, singing, among other things, Faure's Requiem. She'll be doing some of the solos in there. Julie Botter, we have a cut from someone else performing something from the Faure's Requiem. Tell us what we might hear now, just to give listeners a opportunity to hear this very different style of music.
Well, first of all, this is the Robert Shaw Festival Singers. And I think you're referring to the last number of this.
In Paradisum, right?
Right.
Yes.
Interestingly, when Faure wrote this, maybe we can talk about this afterward, there were originally only five movements. And so the In Paradisum, Liberame, and the Offertory were added later. But this is the final piece of a requiem that, by Faure's own admission, does not dwell on the day of judgment and the angstier versions of death, but rather death as the beginning of coming into the light. And so this is a perfect example of that. It's In Paradisum.
We'll now hear Faure.
Thank you.
We've been hearing Gabriel Fauré's In Paradisium from his Requiem, which will be performed by the Chorale May 12th. Julie, tell us what it's like to prepare to conduct something like Fauré's Requiem. It's such a spiritual piece, such a beautiful piece. It's been, as we just heard, recorded by very famous choral groups and conductors and musicians. How do you go about thinking about it? Do you try to do it in some new way? Do you try to make use of the singers you have to present it in, with something special? How do you think about it?
Well, it's always a challenge for a conductor to match repertoire to the singers that are available and their particular strengths and weaknesses. Ed, the one you just heard, for instance, shows a single unison line in the soprano section for quite some time, which in any organization is a trick with varying vibratos and that sort of thing. But when I chose the Requiem, I chose this particular edition, which is, I should say, John Rutter's edition, a somewhat minimized orchestration. We will have just low strings, meaning a string bass, celli, and some three violas and a couple horns, but no top brass, no violins, nothing to compete with the voices. So he, in fact, is quite sure that this is the way Fauré had originally orchestrated it. As we know, men or composers of that age and that generation, that their era, didn't often have large spaces, and their works were for smaller choirs. Even Messiah, that has now grown to phenomenal proportions with hundreds of singers and big orchestras.
And John Rutter, for listeners who may not know, is a English a musicologist and a composer and arranger and conductor.
And conductor, and that's right. The important part, I think, when he's composing something, he has in mind specifically what voices can do. And so his whole philosophy, as I said, about this Requiem is, so what I do anyway is I listen to as many different interpretations as I can and kind of make an assessment based on what resources we have, and both financially and space-wise, venues are always an issue. And then I study a score, and I go through it with our choir. Who are we, you asked us a while ago. Well, we're volunteers, is who we are, and we're non-auditioned. And so in the beginning, we're pretty much learning notes. And I try to intersperse some feeling and some background and some text. We're singing it in Latin, so of course being conscious of what it is we're singing is important.
The English translation will be in the program notes.
It will be an insert in the program notes, right. And then I think you've gotten me to tell you tonight a preview of what I plan to say at rehearsal, and that is, I think pretty much the only thing that's missing now in great proportion is the passion. It's the conductor's job to reflect what the composer had in mind, not what the conductor might like. And in order to do that, you really have to, as a singer, become somewhat vulnerable and be willing to engage fully in the emotion while not losing everything that we've worked hard to do, technically speaking. So it's a process.
We're getting close to the end of our 58 minutes here with our guest today, Julie Byler, who we've just heard speaking, who is in the studio here in Champaign-Urbana at WILL. Also on the phone, Elizabeth Treat, known locally as Amy Treat, a opera soprano in New York. Amy, how do you prepare when you're singing something spiritual, something holy, something that's talking about death and life and resurrection and paradise and How do you prepare emotionally?
Oh, well, that's such a wonderful question. Boy, we could spend another whole hour talking about that.
You have 3 minutes.
3 minutes? Okay. I will say, through school and being in choir primarily, also being a pianist, playing in church services, I have a huge library in my head, in my mental Rolodex, full of hymns and psalms. And, you know, these things just, they stick and come out in odd times when you seem to need them the most, and you hear a little tune and you say, what is that? Oh, that's part of that hymn. How can I keep from singing? All of a sudden, there's some little piece that comes through and ministers to you that's been in your head this whole time. It was right there. These pieces are a lot like that. I think a lot of them need to be lived in, especially these great, wonderful oratorio pieces like the Fourier Requiem, like Handel's Messiah. We hear them over and over. We hear them every year. And I think each new spring that comes around, there's something new that you can bring to it, a new feeling of gratefulness. And it's not only studying the music itself. Of course, the PAUs is very challenging, and I've been working very hard on it technically, but bringing a sensibility, and as Julie so accurately said, a sense of vulnerability. That's the greatest part of the journey of singing and being part of a group that is making music together. That's what, if you want to have a successful experience, that's part of the deal. And so that must be there, part of the preparation as well.
I have, you know, if I were at home with my telephone, I'd be ringing up this station, and I have a question for you, Amy.
Okay.
We've talked about how wonderful things are for you, and I interview all these young artists that come with hopes and dreams. And I would like for you to just, in a very short period of time, tell me what it is that you do during the low times when you think this isn't going to be possible.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, there are many low times, and it's very fitting that we are on a show called Keeping the Faith. I thought a lot about that, and I had to chuckle to myself when I looked at the show and I realized what it was about. I think this journey is very much about that. You have to, as we say in finance, you need to diversify. Because, you know, going and singing the high ups above high seas is spectacular, but that is not what's going to sustain you. It's not what's going to comfort you. It might not even pay the rent. You need to have some good relationships.
And you have a job in finance that helps pay the rent.
Of course. Yeah. Yes, and many people don't realize that. Of course, it's very difficult to sustain yourself
as an artist.
In fact, you work strange hours in order to be free for the daytime. Don't you work like middle of the night or something?
I do, yes. I've always tried to work evenings. I do analysis and graphic design and presentation technology for an investment banking firm on Fifth Avenue. It's a wonderful job, and the CEO of our firm is on the board of directors at Lincoln Center, and he loves opera and is very supportive. And
so determination and perseverance and just a confidence in your own ability.
Yes, and occasionally a break,
which is
hard to take because you feel, if I stop, I'm not going to get to the next level, but you must.
And you have to count on, I'm sure, friends and family for support.
There's no question. It's so important. And, of course, what Julie is doing and what the chorale is doing. I heard you in the FM interview say there were 42 or 43 scholarships you've given over the years with the Young Artist Scholarships.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to interrupt because we are very close to our absolute end time. And let me just say very, very thankfully to Elizabeth Treat in New York and Julie Byler here in the studio for being on Keeping the Faith this afternoon.
See you soon.
We're down to our last minute. And let me just say next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be hearing Poetic Impressions of Illinois by the poet Michael Ledoux, hosted by a good friend of this station and me, Don Nolan. That's next week here on Keeping the Faith. The following week, the local impact of the new Pope Francis with guest host Stan Yanchus, and several priests from this diocese, from this region. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. I remind people to remember to bring things to the Y for dump and run, things that you're tired of, but that students or other people in the community might appreciate taking advantage of. That's the University YMCA at the University of Illinois in Champaign. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. We go out with tenor sax music from New York, John Ellis. ¶¶
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
This week on This American Life.
Hey, Bill here. Hey, I had a fella, he was walking. He's walking across the country like a dummy. I frisked him down. He ain't got no gun on him, no pistol.
Andrew decided to walk across the country interviewing people along the way, which is a premise for a radio story which almost never works. This time it does. This week.
Saturday afternoon at 1 and Sunday evening at 6 on AM 580.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
This American Life with Ira Glass is on the way. Tonight, stories of people who, for reasons they can't always explain, feel compelled to get out and go somewhere, including the story of one man who decides to take a trip from Philadelphia to San Francisco by foot. I'm Jason Croft, and you're tuned to WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. At 7 o'clock, it's To the Best of Our Knowledge, followed by New Dimensions at 9. Thanks for being with us.